So Gary, you're back on Irish terra firma after arguably one of the most dramatic nights in Irish football for nearly a decade, I would imagine. How's the voice? How's the heart? How's everything?
Just about calming down. It was incredible. There was just, as you say, so much drama. I don't even know if you're saying a decade, probably even longer, you know. Maybe one of the most dramatic games, given how much was at stake, we've been involved in for a long time, if not forever, you know.
It's maybe if we rewind it a little bit and look at the Portugal game. I think the Portugal game kind of changed the outlook and the belief of everything going into this match. We won 2-0, and all of a sudden, the attitude of coming into this game was completely different, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, certainly it was huge for confidence, because I mean, okay, we'd started the group with a 2-2 draw against Hungary. We'd come from 2-2, but so it did finish on a high. But everything just totally dissipated, and everything went wrong once we lost in Armenia. And look, I think everyone coming out of the stadium in Yerevan would have said we were done, we were toast. Went to Lisbon, played really, 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 really well. I thought we were worth the point. And then that late goal was just such a kick in the teeth, or somewhere else even. And, okay, we beat Armenia, even that was a bit laboured. But the win against Portugal came out of nowhere, really. But it was an incredible performance. Great night, great atmosphere, but a very controlled performance. Played really well, and that gave the players, the squad, everyone great confidence going into the game then in Budapest.
What was it like on the ground there then for Irish fans? You were over there, obviously talking to Irish fans and being around them as well. Was there perhaps a change of maybe belief had come into it that we could get something, that we could go to Hungary and win?
Well, yeah, I think definitely after the win against Portugal, I think there was a general feeling that we've got a real chance, that we can go there, we can beat them, we can do it. You know, there was real hope there. And I mean, it made sense. Having played so well, it definitely made sense that there was a real chance there.
What was
But still, I think everybody knew it was going to be a really, really difficult game. Hungary are a really good side, and they still would have been hot favourites to win the game.
Yeah, and an impressive arena as well to go with it. There was 3,000 Ireland fans, so there was about 64,000 Hungarian fans in there, expecting them to go through to have a night of celebration as well. So it was a real kind of pressure cooker atmosphere as well, and I think that's probably one of the most impressive things about it as well, that you weren't just, you know, playing this kind of momentous occasion where we had to win, but also, you know, having to deal with, you know, 60,000 fans on top of that as well, was just probably made the one of the finest away wins in Irish history.
Yeah, I mean, it was a magnificent stadium. It was packed to the gills. I mean, one of my taxi drivers, one of my Uber drivers Bolt driver, he actually said he'd got a ticket for the Portugal game, but he'd been online for hours, but he tried and just it was impossible to get a ticket for our game. So it was totally sold out. It was the game everyone wanted to be at. Luckily for the Irish fans, actually, anyone who applied in time was able to get a ticket. So, but after that, plenty of people made a late decision to go after Portugal. So unfortunately, we had Irish fans locked out as well. It was a brilliant atmosphere. I mean, it's a really, really impressive stadium. It's going to host the Champions League final next May. Mm-hmm. And it's a fitting venue for a Champions League final because it's magnificent.
Into the game then, the Hungary score first, and geez, you must have been all sitting there thinking, going, ah, man, here we go.
As you said, Hungary scored first, and it was a real, the worst start possible. They had a flurry of corners. I think they got three corners in the first 3 minutes. The short corner caught us out, and, well, it was onside, okay? It doesn't matter now. It certainly doesn't matter now, but there was a lot of talk at the time that VAR or VAR got it wrong and the goal was offside. And
well, I think the argument from a number of people was where the television cameras were set up. It was very, very hard to say yes, it's offside, because we all know that camera angles aren't the same thing as being in line with it. So I think a lot of people kind of looked at it and went, yeah, it's offside, but I suspect if the camera was probably bang in line, it probably wasn't.
Yeah, and I've seen still photos as well, and I think it's Jason Malumbi's heel actually does play him onside. So I think they probably got it right. But at the time, the word we were getting in the stands was that it was offside. So there was a little bit of a grievance there as well. But okay, I think in fairness and looking back at it, they did get it right. But I suppose it's easy to say that when you've actually won the game anyway.
Well, I mean, VAR went our way for the foul against Chessie. So, I mean, it kind of worked in our favour too as well after that.
Look, you want the referees to get the right decisions ultimately, but VAR can be very frustrating in the stadium. And anyway, we'll go on and talk about it, but certainly was in the back of my mind as we were going absolutely nuts, I hope to God VAR doesn't change this.
And I think as well that you mentioned in the stadium as well, I think the referee did blow the whistle for the penalty. He just never heard it. So that's why he was kind of waiting so long to take the penalty. And then he kind of looked at the ref and he was like, am I going or what? And he went, you know?
Yeah, so that seemed a strange one. No, nobody seemed to know what was happening there. Yeah, I think that's what Troy said, that he was waiting for the whistle and he either never heard the whistle or it never came. And but anyway, all worked well for that. It was a definite penalty. And
oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, thankfully VAR got it right, you know.
Yeah, and then Hungary take the lead again. It's 2-1 then, and then I think even at 2-1, you still got the feeling that the team wasn't done, that it wasn't a killer blow, and that if we just get churning away and churning away, that there was something to be had against this Hungarian defense. Because in fairness, we didn't get down to the Hungarian penalty box a huge amount during the game, but when we did, I think we did give them problems, and at times they kind of looked like they were kind of maybe very uncomfortable with the way we were trying to play amongst them.
Yeah, they did look suspect. I mean, should go back to the goal, because it was an incredible strike by Varga. It was an absolutely brilliant goal. Yeah. Maybe we did stand off them a little bit and gave them a bit of space, but what a touch and what a strike. Just hats off to him. But as you said, they were there to be got at. There was certainly a feeling we could have got at them. They did look a bit vulnerable. I think the game got very stretched. I mean, they had chances. Had they got the third goal, obviously it was good night, Irene, and it was all over. But I suppose, we'd nothing to lose. We had to take risks. But I thought we could have got in at them. But then as the game wore on and it stayed at 2-1, you're kind of thinking, I don't know, maybe it's just not our day.
And they kind of, I think the Hungarians kind of just tried to play the game out rather than going for the killer blow. They kind of seemed to just kind of pass the ball around, maybe, you know, slow down the play, you know, lads kind of rolling around on the floor a little bit longer than they normally would, etc. So it was clear that they kind of felt that 2-1 was enough and that this was going to be their night. And then another utterly brilliant goal from Troy, an amazingly taken goal, which I originally thought was offside because he was in so much space. I mean, how did you guys in the stand see that goal?
Yeah, I mean, I think Ferg got to say it was a brilliant true ball from Finn Azaz as well.
That's right, yeah.
So it was, that was crucial. And someone who probably wasn't making the impact on the game that he was hoping to make, but he maybe dropped a bit deeper and suddenly he was. And I mean, that was a, he has a great eye for a pass, and he picked out a beautiful through ball. And but look, Troy is the man of the moment, and it was a superb finish. And the coolness to just dink it over the keeper. And then you're thinking, yes, game on, there's 10 minutes left. We got a chance, we just need one more goal. And I think that's when people started to believe, because I think the goal came a little bit out of the blue. It felt it to me anyway, that the game seemed to be winding down. I was thinking, oh, you're getting into, kind of remember seeing 65, 70, 75, 80 minutes, and you're... And then the goal came, and suddenly it's back on.
Yeah, and I think as well that goal kind of put Hungary into maybe, I won't say panic mode, but they certainly looked really, really uncomfortable from that moment on. And all of a sudden, the Irish players realized, well, hold on a second, we are well in this. All we need is a goal, any kind of goal, you know, off somebody's heel and off their arse into the net. It doesn't matter. Do you know what I mean? And you kind of felt that the Hungarians really were just kind of dropping further back and dropping further back and dropping further back, because they realized that they were in a lot of trouble in this game.
See, I don't even know if they were in trouble, but there was certainly nervousness came. I mean, they were so close, and suddenly they realized if we concede one goal, we're out. And they seemed to be consumed by fear. And I think they
kind of went from being fairly comfortable, and in the space of 2 or 3 minutes, they were in a real precarious position. So I think it swung very much in a different direction to what they were kind of used to for the past 20, 30 minutes of the game. And so all of a sudden they were kind of thinking, oh, we're in a bit of a precarious position here, and we've got to do something about this. But they just couldn't find that kind of space to get out enough.
Yeah, and they did. They did seem to say, I think the nervousness seemed to take over, and it caused them to sit back. And that, I think that played right into our hands, because it gave us a chance just to have a go. Even if just we tried a lot of long throws. They didn't really work. They didn't really trouble them, actually. We struggled to beat the first man. But they stayed in a very compact shape and let us have the ball, which I think that worked to our advantage. Had they come out and tried to pass us off the pitch, they may well have got the third goal. But the fact that they, to me anyway, looking at it, they seemed to... It's try and keep their shape, try and be very tight at the back. And I suppose, look, we've played like that a lot, but you kind of play like that when you feel you're up against a superior side. And I don't think they would have considered us to be a superior side, but I think it was just the nervousness that they kept it tight.
Yeah, I think perhaps because they had already looked vulnerable a number of times when we came forward. You know, they had given away the penalty. They had left Troy Parrott in an acre of space to get his finish off for the second goal. So I think they kind of dropped back because they realized defensively they weren't at the races in that game. And that puts pressure on, I suppose, the defenders. And then all of a sudden, the guys that are sitting in front of them all of a sudden kind of go, right, we need to come back a bit more to help our defenders who are kind of maybe not playing so well right now. So everybody kind of drops back a little, and then your strikers drop back because they're not getting the connection from the midfield. So everything just seemed to fall back. And then obviously, you know, those last 5 minutes in at a time were just absolute kind of, I won't say chaos, but they were certainly panicking quite a bit, I think, from that point on going into at a time.
Yeah, so I suppose it's easy to look back maybe, but I was feeling, I don't remember the keeper really having to make a save, and I was feeling, okay, we need to test the keeper, we need to get something in on top of him or anything like that. And I don't know, we tried the long throws, weren't really working, but they were, as you say, they certainly seemed to be very nervous. And then the clock was ticking
and then I suppose when you're in the stands as well, I suspect the clock seems to run, well, even when you're watching at home as well, it seems to run a lot faster than you think it's going.
Yeah, yeah, when you need a goal and time is running out, it seems to be running very quickly. When you're trying to hang on, it seems to take forever. But yeah, it did seem to be the last, I mean, there were 15 minutes, 16 minutes, whatever it was, between Troy's goals, second and third goals. That seemed to go by in the blink of an eye. Yeah.
And then probably one of the greatest copy and paste goals that ever comes across, almost when we need it in Irish football, a long ball from the goalkeeper up to the top, and then Scales nods it on, and it was that kind of, and you've seen all the footage around Ireland, and I'm sure it was the same with the away fans and stuff like that. There's that moment of just, it's almost like silence, because you realize the ball has come down and Troy Parrott is near it, and we wonder what's going to happen next. And what was it like in those kind of, in that moment, because it's now already an iconic moment in Irish football?
Yeah, so I mean, I think you have to take the whole thing in context. I mean, Caoimhín Kelleher was on the halfway line. Yeah. Be able to deliver this ball from the half. So that's how much the Hungarians have sat back. And look, it was a great delivery. It wasn't an aimless long ball. And Liam Scales did superbly well. He did incredibly well to win that header. And then it comes down to Troy. And as you said, he had to stretch every single inch, millimetre of his body I didn't see that live. I didn't realize how much he had to do it live. But I mean, when you watch it back, you see how much, and it was only the tip of his studs that actually put the ball in the net. But it was one of those times when time seemed to stand still, and suddenly you realize, you see it hit the net, it's in the goal, it's in. And everyone just went nuts.
What was it like? Were you in the away end? Was it chaos?
So no, I was actually, so I was working as SLO, but I was also on a 9 o'clock flight out of Budapest. So I watched the game from in front of the press box.
Oh wow!
Because I didn't want to risk being missing my flight. Now, there was no plans for a hold back, but I didn't want to risk if there was one. So I was surrounded by Hungarians, so I actually didn't celebrate the second goal. Because I was conscious. Now the media were just behind me, so it was kind of a semi-neutral zone, area, but everybody there around me was Hungarian. But I mean, obviously, when we scored the third goal, you just could do nothing but celebrate, you know. And I could hear the media guys, the Irish media behind, were celebrating. And they're, you know, typically in a press box, you're not meant to celebrate, but certainly some of them did. I don't know, maybe I'm sure all of them did actually. There are times you just can't keep, you can't stand, you keep your decorum. You just, it was just such an incredible moment.
And
you just, what can I say? You just went totally nuts when you suddenly realize it's in the net. And then you see the mad celebrations of all the players, the staff, everything down in front of me. And then you have the really horrible, horrible thought, please don't let VAR chalk this off now, you know. So
yeah, and I think that was like that everywhere. The commentators for RTÉ said the same thing, you just hope it's not offside, and you're sitting there going, oh my God. And there's this kind of moment where you're kind of sitting there going, is the referee gonna call this? Is he gonna walk over to the screen or what? And it was just like this, oh, not now, not this.
Yeah, you see, the thing is, Irish fans of a certain age, and I obviously count myself in that, we've been trained, going back to the 70s and the 80s, you've nearly been trained to look at the linesman when we score. Right, and I mean, the best example I can think of off the top of my head is Seville 92, when John Aldridge scored a brilliant goal. He was about 4 yards onside, and everyone went nuts. And I mean, the first thing I did was look down at the linesman, and then he had his flag up. Now, it was a terrible decision. You can watch it back. It's one of the worst offside decisions any linesman has ever got wrong. He was about 4 yards onside, but everyone around me went nuts, and I said, oh, no, not again, you know. So, yeah. And I mean, I still nearly looked to the linesman, and now you have another complication, because even if the linesman says it's okay, you got to wait for VAR for a goal to be allowed. So it did. It was just such a horrible thought entering my head. Oh no, please don't let VAR chalk this off.
Yeah, and it was an extraordinary moment. I should probably take this time as well to apologize to my father, who was sitting next to me, and he probably had a heart attack, which I sincerely apologize for, because I just went absolutely crazy. I was jumping around the living room. I nearly broke my brother's light, everything. It was just bedlam. But it instantly cemented it as an incredible moment in Irish folklore. It is there forever alongside some of the greatest and fantastic goals that have meant so much to Irish fans over the years. And I think it's that kind of incredible moment that the nation, I think, as well, seems to have responded to as well.
Yeah, so I mean, we didn't realise at the time at all that the whole country was watching. Probably should have realised, because it's actually been talked about a lot in the last couple of days, that nothing, and we've talked about it on podcasts before, that nothing can capture the nation like the Irish football team. Mm. That, you know, it's I even said, if the rugby team ever do, and I hope they do go on to win a World Cup, I don't think it will have the same broad appeal, the same impact. I mean, outside of Limerick, rugby is still very, very much a middle class, upper class game. There's huge parts of the country where the GAA has no influence. But football is played, and it's followed by everyone. And I mean, for a lot of these examples, I got to go right back to things like Euro 88, Italian 90, USA 94, 2002 World Cup, when the country just stops and everyone watches. And you can't really replicate that anywhere else in any other sport or anything else, you know?
And even when, like, I'm not trying to denigrate any other sports that popular sports in Ireland, but I would say, you know, even Ireland in the Rugby World Cup, or you know an All Ireland final day and stuff like that, which is such a seminal part in the Irish sporting calendar as well, it doesn't feel like the country is completely stopped to watch this moment. And like you said, it's 88, particularly 1990, I think, where that really cemented itself in the Irish consciousness as a unifying kind of sport that everybody could stop and watch and feel like they were a part of that moment as well. And, you know, all the videos over the weekend coming out from, you know, all the bars and all the people in their homes and all that kind of stuff, it felt like we were back in those moments again that we hadn't felt for quite some time. Maybe you could argue, you know, Robbie Brady and Lille was probably the closest we've come since then. But like, even still, it just feels like this kind of, it feels like international football is back in Ireland, and it hadn't been for the past couple of years.
It felt this was bigger than Robbie Brady and Lille.
But no, I'm just saying, mean,
maybe,
by comparison,
maybe
like
that's sort of recency. Yeah.
That's just the biggest moment.
You have to go back to things like Robbie Keane and Ibaraki, which I still think is bigger because he was actually in a World Cup and he was at the last minute as well. And I appreciate it was only to draw the game, but that was effectively setting us up to go through to the knockout stages. Because I think
the Carmen Copney of the of the winner as well for Troy Parrott.
Yeah. I mean, a long ball, a flick on from Niall. Was it Kenny Cunningham with the long ball? Yeah. Niall Quinn with the flick on, and Robbie was there to bury it. And so it was. Well, Troy is a long way to go to catch Robbie with his 68 goals, but I'd love to see him get close. Well, you know,
he has five down in two games, so you never know. He might.
Well,
do it.
Yeah. So, but I think he's doubled his tally this week. But I mean, even to catch Niall Quinn is number two, who with 22 goals, which is an incredible tally. And so, if Troy would catch Niall, it would be something else as well.
Just to kind of, I suppose, to round it all off, you know, an incredible weekend, one that certainly goes into the footballing history books as well. You know, not just in terms of the win and the manner of the win, but the sense of everything that came with it and that came after it, I think, is something that just will cement this. And also for kids as well who didn't grow up with 88 and 90 and 94, you know, or 2002 as well. Like these, they hadn't witnessed these kind of moments on a grand scale like this. And I think that kind of will bring a kind of resurgence to, I suppose, Irish international football as well.
Yes, hopefully. I mean, and that's, I mean, people were saying we're back, you know, and things like that. And it was a feeling, and hopefully this follows through, because obviously we've got playoffs in March, but there's certainly a feeling there's a resurgence, and that, I mean, I think it's fair to say our international team has been in the doldrums for a few years, and the interest, I mean, there's a very, very loyal fan base who never went away, and the crowds have been incredible, and the travelling support has been incredible, given the lack of success. So you can only imagine what will happen. I mean, I had people messaging me on Sunday that had been watching the match, and they'd never watch a football match, you know. So it did touch something. It did capture something. And now in the last couple of days, everyone's been looking for tickets. I actually, in Budapest Airport, I said, I'll just chance it and see what the season ticket sales are like. And there was 5,000 people ahead of me in the queue, and it took me nearly 2 hours to get in, you know. Jeez. So there was thousands of people trying to buy season tickets that had been on sale for a week. And I don't know how the sales were going, but certainly they've changed dramatically since whatever 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock Irish time on Sunday.
I joked with you as well. I sent that meme from Harry Potter where he was getting all the letters through the chimney box, and I said, "This will be you now over the next couple of weeks, and then the weeks in the run up into the playoffs, you'll just be inundated with people going, so tickets, how do I get them? Where's the tickets? How do I get them?"
I know. Well, the answer to that is you can buy a season ticket now. You can, they're still available. I suspect there'll be people watching Wales Macedonia with the tickets in their basket or something like that, or maybe watching the draw on Thursday with tickets in their basket. Who knows what's going to happen? Well, whether we get a home or an away playoff, the demand is going to be incredible. And we'll see what happens.
Absolutely, yeah. But I think it's fair to say that Irish international football is back in a big way. And I think perhaps the people that grew up with the nostalgia of the great 1990 and 94, etc., were passing those on to their kids, and their grandkids can finally have those moments together as well. And know everybody, all generations will find out what it's really, really about as well. Gary, as ever, thank you very much. Nice to hear you're back safe and sound from the chaos, yeah. I'm sure, that ensued after the game as well. But we'll talk to you soon. Cheers, Gary.
Cheers. All the best.